Good morning, and thanks for coming to my 10 o'clock panel. It's kind of early, but this is the parade, and you guys chose this. We're going to talk this morning about digital rights management, kind of a overview and brief discussion of some of the concepts. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, like a lot of really technical detail. We're going to talk about that in the question and answer afterwards if you'd like. What we are going to cover is a brief overview of copyright, digital rights management systems, some examples, some pros and cons. We'll get into the DMCA, which is a law that deals with digital rights management. We'll get some case examples, and then we'll end up with the future of digital rights management, where it's going, and some of the laws that are being brought up to cover digital rights management. So first, what is digital rights management? It's a system that allows or denies access to copyrighted material in digital mediums. That being said, what's a copyright? I'll begin by saying I'm not a lawyer. I'm a technical person. When we get to the technical stuff, that's where my strong point is, so I research this stuff, and your mileage may vary. First of all, a copyright is an intellectual property. Intellectual property is different than physical property, and there's three types of intellectual property. There's copyright, trademark, and patents. We're going to deal specifically with copyrights. Copyrights are a little bit, they're different than patents. They give the owner exclusive rights. They give the owner exclusive rights to do certain things, such as make and sell copies of their work, export the work, do derivatives of the work, and public performance. They also have the right to assign those rights to somebody else. So example is, if Stephen King writes a book, he has the right to make a movie. He chooses not to make that movie. He assigns that part of the copyright to a movie company. He assigns his copyright to somebody else. Again, copyright is intellectual property. The American system is based on property. We have physical property, which is what we own. Physical property is covered under things such as receipts, titles, deeds. Intellectual property is covered under copyright. So what is a CD? A CD is kind of a hybrid. A CD is physical property as you purchased it, you own it, you have the rights to do things with it. You have the rights to play it where you want to. You have the rights to not play it. You have the rights to sell it. What you do not have the rights to do is to copy it, because that part of the CD is intellectual property of the copyright owner. For example, a Metallica CD is, the songs on the track on the CD are owned by Metallica, and the CD is owned by you. Metallica cannot come into your house and take the CD-ROM, because that would be theft, physical property. Copyright has something unique. It's called fair use. Fair use is covered under U.S. Code 17, Section 107, and people complain that it's ambiguous. People, being copyright owners, complain that it's ambiguous, which means that it doesn't stay the same over time. People will also say that it's really ambiguous for a reason. It's ambiguous to maintain a fair balance between technology and copyright use. If you ever use fair use, there's four factors that the judge will consider. Those factors are the purpose and character of the work, the nature of the copyrighted work, the amount and substantiality of the work used, and the effective use on potential market. That means if you copy a whole song for a presentation and the owner of the song complains, you will probably not be able to use fair use because you used the whole song. Fair use really hasn't been tried in court all that much. Recently, Jib Jab, the parody of Woody Guthrie's song, was going to use fair use. However, it later turned out that this land was in public domain, which means it wasn't under copyright at all. So there was no case. A case law that pretty much defines where we're going is the VCR. Pretty much everybody knows what the VCR is. It started with Sony invented the Betamax, which is a very specific VCR. VCR stands for Video Cassette Recorder. They invented it and it was able to record copyrighted works. Universal and Disney in 1976 didn't like that idea. They feared it infringed on their copyright and would hurt their potential market, so they sued Sony. They gave two choices to Sony. One was to incorporate some technology that would prevent recording of copyrighted work or to take it off the market. Sony claimed time shifting, which is the ability to record something and watch it later, was non-infringing and therefore under fair use. The case went on for a while and eventually made it to the Supreme Court. And in 1984, the Supreme Court ruled that time shifting was non-infringing, therefore fair use, and ruled in Sony's favor, which means the VCR is allowed. This is important for a couple reasons. First, it's important because the player is involved. If you look at digital rights management and copyright law now, you'll see that Sony is now doing the suing, as in this case, they were the ones being sued. Second is the courts applied changing laws to – sorry. The court applied a new approach to copyright law that wasn't expected because of changing technology. And fourth is Blockbuster. Blockbuster wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the outcome of this case. The VCR would have probably wouldn't be there as without the result of this case. The VCR became extremely popular, and so did movie rentals, which brings the movie industry into your home, Universal and Disney being movie companies. This is just a brief slide on duration or copyright duration. I'm not going to go into it because this isn't a talk on copyright. If you want to read a good book about copyright and its effects on culture, Lawrence Lessig's book, Free Culture, it's available in the Creative Commons license for free, is probably a good book to read. So now that we have a basic understanding of what copyright is, we can talk a little more about digital rights management. So again, digital rights management systems allow or deny access to copyrighted material in digital form. Basically, it's a gatekeeper between allowing or denying access. It uses encryption, key-based encryption to be precise, and its main purpose is to prevent illegal copying. Digital rights management system, as I said, uses encryption, key-based encryption. So let's talk about encryption a little bit. Encryption is the art of transforming a message to be unreadable. It's a part of a larger science called cryptology, which is the art of secret writing. Key-based encryptions, which what digital rights management systems are primarily based on, use keys to transform the message. So using one algorithm, one encryption mechanism, called normally an algorithm, using a key can change the output based on the key. So here we have an example. We have Alice, Bob, and Carol. Alice and Bob want to communicate. that's Alice, Bob, and Carol. Alice and Bob want to communicate. I should have brought a laser pointer. Alice being the one on the left, Bob on the right, Carol on the top, just in case people don't get the reference of who's who. That's Alice in Wonderland and Carol from Carol Burnett and Bob. Alice and Bob want to communicate and don't want Carol to read the message. Alice discusses with Bob and determines an encryption mechanism, and then they choose a key. The key is then exchanged at some predetermined time to keep the key private, and the message is encrypted with that key. Bob then gets the message and uses the key to decrypt the message, meaning he can read it again. The message is passed encrypted. If Carol intercepts the message is encrypted, she cannot read the message, she cannot decrypt it. She obtains a key from Alice in order to read another message. That key will not decrypt the message. The key is unique, meaning the message is unique, or the encrypted message is unique. This mechanism applies through pretty much all digital rights management systems, especially all digital rights management systems we're going to talk about today. So, first example of a digital rights management system is the DVD player. DVDs are primarily encrypted with a system called CSS, which is the content scrambling system. It has two types of restrictions, two main types of restrictions. One is the DVD must be played on a licensed DVD player, and there's something called region encoding, which is a DVD bought in one region cannot be played on a DVD player in the other region. So if you go to France and you buy a French DVD and you bring it to America and try to play it on your DVD player, you will not be able to. So what happens is a DVD player manufacturer goes to the DVD-CCA, which is the DVD Copy Control Association, and they pay a licensing fee. Part of that licensing fee gives them a key. That key is then stored in the hardware of the DVD player and sold as a DVD player to you. You buy a DVD, which is an encrypted media. You put this DVD in your DVD player. It then goes out to the hardware of the DVD player, pulls out the key, and is used to decrypt the actual video when you watch it. So you have you'll see you have a key, an encryption mechanism, which is CSS, and encrypted and decrypted information. Downloadable music, we're starting to make this change to downloadable music. This is primarily because of a file system or file format called MP3. Napster kind of brought it into the limelight, but Napster infringed on copyright, so it got squashed. So it put everybody into a scramble to give you a legitimate reason, legitimate way to download and enjoy music. iTunes by Apple is one of the most popular. They just recently went over 100 million songs. They're also one of the least restrictive of digital rights management formats. Some of their restrictions include that you have five authorized computers. For example, if you have three computers in your house, each one can be authorized to play the song that you download. You have to deauthorize. If you get to five, the sixth one will not work. You can deauthorize a computer, which means that machine will no longer be able to listen to the tracks that were purchased and go to a new track, to a new computer, sorry. The audio that you download, the file you download, can be burnt to a CD up to 7 times. It used to be 10. Just recently, with a new version, they brought it back to 7. The system's called Fair Play, and how it works. So basically, you have if anybody's never used iTunes, it's a music download service. You connect to Apple servers. You sign up an account, and they store you in their servers. When you select a song, you click the Buy Me Now. You enter your password. What happens is a container file is created. At that time, the audio file is encrypted with a master key. The encrypted audio stream, which is an AAC format, is put into this container file. And then a user key is generated. The user key is random and guaranteed to be unique. That user key is used to encrypt the master key, and then the encrypted master key is sent into this this container file. The container file is then sent to your computer, downloaded to your computer, and stored inside your playlist. The user key is sent to you, and iTunes stores it in its public key ring. The user key is also stored on iTunes music servers. So now you have a user key and a key ring. If you download 10 songs, you have 10 user keys and a key ring. So when you go to play the song, you click play. The user key is pulled from the key ring, and it pulls the encrypted master key from this container file. The master key is decrypted, and then the master key is then used to decrypt the audio stream, and you listen to the audio stream. This happens almost basically real time. It's very quick. The next system, digital downloadable music's special because it's in a format that is new and they can change it. The problem we have with a lot of these things is the CD. A normal CD has to be able to play in standard players. Nobody wants to buy a new player to play a common CD. So they're trying to apply systems to protect the copyright image, prevent copying of CDs. One system that didn't just come out but is currently being used is the MediaMax CD3 system. Velvet Revolver's Contraband CD used this system, and Contraband was top the American sales charts when it first came out. The restrictions on when you buy the CD, there's a silver label on the front that says, this CD will only play in standard CD players and properly configured computers. So the properly configured computer can do several things. It's restricted to, you can copy the tracks to your hard drive, you can burn the tracks to a CD 3 times, and you can download tracks to a portable player, an MP3 player. The MP3 player has to support the digital rights management system, which is, I'm sorry, I don't know. And there's talk that it only allows 3 songs to be copied to a portable player at one time, so there's a check-in, check-out mechanism. How this works, if you buy the CD, you can immediately put it into your car player and play it just fine. It's standard CD audio. If you put it into your computer, it plays a different format. There are two types of, there's two basic media, the songs are on the CD twice. One in standard CD audio, the other in encrypted Windows media format. When you put the CD in your computer, there's a program that automatically runs if it's properly configured, and you accept the license agreement, and some software is installed on your computer. The CD then must be played through this software. So now we have three very popular examples of digital rights management systems. There are pros and cons to DRM systems. First of the pros is that it prevents copying. That's the goal. The second is that it will allow lower cost media. For example, a DVD that can only be viewed 5 times will be cheaper than a DVD that's unrestricted. CDs are the same way. Anything that you can restrict the use to, they claim you can charge less for. It allows digital rights management system allow systems like iTunes and Napster and Reel to exist. The music company would never go for a downloadable music system without digital rights management system. And it's also, DRM systems are also required to pass certain WIPO treaties. WIPO is the World Intellectual Property Organization. They allow copyright to be transferable across nations. If you sign a treaty, then your copyright works in other nations that have signed the treaty. Were the pros or cons? Oh, the pros normally come from copyright companies. You don't hear a lot of, civil liberties people talking about, pros of digital rights management systems. They talk about the cons, the bad sides. One of the bad sides are consumer rights. It removes fair use. Once you had the right to do things with under copyright's fair use, you no longer have that use because DRM prevents that. You have privacy. You have to authenticate. These things work on keys. The keys are unique to a user, so you have to authenticate, which means the iTunes knows what I download. They can query and search what I download and find out the 100 songs I download. All systems can do this. So whereas before, if you were reading things that you didn't want other people to know, it was nearly impossible for people to find out what your entertainment choices were. Now they can find out in the matter of seconds. You see censorship. Censorship, basically, you can prevent people from using your things in reviews that will not be favorable in your product. And a big one is player technology. Digital rights management systems are based on a lot on kind of hardware or software, which means one format will not play on another person's media. So, for example, iTunes, an iTunes track will only play on an iPod, which is their digital rights management controlled player. A track you download from Reel, another popular download service, will only play on Reel devices. Reel has just recently created a system called Harmony, which will change a Reel DRM system, DRM encoded file, to an iTunes in format so it can go on the iPod. Apple doesn't like this, but we'll see what happens. Microsoft just got into the game as well. But also, some players get ignored completely. Some digital rights management systems won't work on Macs. Some won't work on PCs. For the longest time, iTunes didn't work on a PC. And Linux and BSD and other kind of Unixes are ignored altogether. So this brings us to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Every system that I've talked about here today, if you read or you kind of have an understanding, you know that these things have all been circumvented. They've all been bypassed for various reasons. So what happened was basically corporations said, we have to be able to protect our copyright. Do something for us, government. And the government said in 1998, they passed unanimous vote, they passed the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. First of all, I got to say one thing. I've read a lot on the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and a lot of times it doesn't get a fair and balanced look. For example, it does allow some types of circumvention. Oh, first of all, I'm sorry. The Digital Millennium Copyright basically says that it criminalizes the production and dissemination of technology that can be used to bypass digital rights management systems. Circumvention. A lot of times in the press, it doesn't get a fair and balanced look. You hear it from one side or the other. For example, you almost never hear that it does allow some types of circumvention. For example, it does say that you can circumvent digital rights management systems in order to protect your privacy, and also you're allowed to circumvent digital rights management systems in order to bypass child protection or to permit child protection, which means if you're behind a web blocking system, you're allowed to circumvent that to go around it. So, and it also allows research. For example, you're allowed to try to get around to research the encryption mechanisms used in digital rights management systems. However, there are some stipulations. The stipulations are the information must be disseminated to advance the knowledge or development of encryption rather than to use as circumvention. You must be engaged in a course of study, employed, or appropriately trained in encryption technology, which means if you're not an encryption researcher, you may not be allowed to do this. It's never really been tried yet. And the copyright holder must be notified of the details of the research. Basically, you have to be a scientist in order to do research. The digital rights, the DMCA has a checks, kind of a check system in it. Every 3 years, the Librarian of Congress reports on the state of digital rights management systems and its effect on copyright. It takes several things into consideration, things such as the availability of use for copyrighted works, the availability for use of copyrighted works for nonprofit preservation and educational purposes, and the effects of digital rights management systems on consumers and the effect of digital rights management systems on copyright owners. It's been, I guess, been up three times, and we really haven't seen much change in the DMCA because of this. Service providers are not responsible. If you're an internet service provider and you're hosting somebody with copyright material, you're not held reliable. If you block their if when you're informed that somebody has infringing material, you block their access. We'll get into that. Might have changed just recently. We'll talk about a court case that just got settled on Wednesday. And computer repair companies are allowed to make temporary copies. So certain things are allowed. That being said, the DMCA has been tried several times. It's been used in the court of law several times. One of the popular cases is the DCSS case. As we talked about earlier, DVDs are encoded using the CSS system, and the DCSS system is used to decrypt that without a licensed player. The case was tried on two different people. It was on John Johansson and the 2600 organization. 2600 is a hacker culture magazine and website. First, John Johansson was sued, and he was later acquitted of all charges, and he claimed that he didn't actually write the decryption portion of this program. When he was tried under a Norwegian court system, the prosecution made the statement that he was trespassing on computer systems. The defense asked, "What computer systems?" And the answer was his own. So that kind of gives you a little bit of the thought behind how these things go in court. 2600, on the other hand, was sued for linking to the DCSS code. They had a link on their webpage that showed you the code, the computer instructions to the DCSS. They lost their first case and were forced to remove all links. They did, and they were in the process of the appeal. During the appeal, their legal staff said, "This will probably go to the Supreme Court. We don't think it's a good idea that you take it to the Supreme Court. The courts will not look favorably upon you because of who you are, and this will be a precedent-setting case." So 2600 agreed to that and basically removed their appeal, letting the case stand as it is. Another popular case is Dmitry Skelyarov. Dmitry was a Russian programmer. He worked for a company called Elcomsoft. Elcomsoft, among other things, makes a software to take the content of a encrypted a DRM system ebook from Adobe and make it readable in standard PDF, which is a portable system, which means the ebooks don't work on Linux. They don't work on FreeBSD. They didn't at the time. So he wanted to, basically, Elcomsoft wanted to make it so everybody could read it, and also visually impaired people couldn't read these things at the time. So Elcomsoft wrote something that made, if you were the licensed user, you could read it on other formats. Adobe didn't like this. Dmitry came over to give a talk at DEF CON, and he was arrested. He was thrown in jail, and a lot of bad publicity came. Adobe wrote a letter using the EFF to say, "We don't want to press charges, let him go." The government and the prosecution decided not to for some time and continued to pursue its case. They did release him eventually, a couple months later, saying, "We will release you if you agree to testify against your corporation, Elcomsoft." He agreed and was released. It's important to note that Elcomsoft is a Russian company, and this is not illegal in Russia. In fact, this is absolutely legal in Russia. So the case went against Elcomsoft. Later, everybody was acquitted. Elcomsoft and Dmitry was acquitted of all charges, and the jury used something known as jury nullification, which is kind of interesting because normally a case looks at the details of the case at hand. The jury this time decided to look at the law and decided that the law was unjust. So everybody was acquitted of charges because the law was unjust. There's lots of other DMCA cases. One is Edward Felton. This one's kind of interesting because it goes to the research part of the portion of the DMCA. Technically, I guess he was never sued. He was threatened to be sued. SDMI had a DRM system that they wanted tested. Mr. Felton broke that and was going to publicize his work. They sued because they didn't want this work publicized. Well, they threatened to sue because they didn't want this publicized. And later, as publicity went around, they said they never sued. IboHack was Sony's little robot dog. We won't talk about that a whole lot. Basically, somebody had some software that allowed the dog to do some dancing stuff. Lexmark said you couldn't make, says you cannot make refurbished cartridges. Blizzard Entertainment has Battle.net, and there's another service called BNetD, and Blizzard is suing them. Not all are computer-related. DirecTV is sued. Owners of people who purchase smart card programmers. The Chamberlain Group, they sued a company called Skylink for making a garage door opener remote. Now, this I got to go to a side. This on Wednesday, the appeal case was closed, and the courts went in Skylink's favor, saying that the DMCA is not allowed to enforce new copyright. You have to show that a circumvention, you have to show that the circumvention that took place violates your copyright. And in the case of Chamberlain against Skylink, said you didn't violate their copyright, so you cannot sue. So that just came out on Wednesday. That's probably going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And there's also quite a few more, which we won't go. A lot of smaller ones that don't get a lot of publicity or have not got a lot of publicity. There's the future of digital rights management systems. DRM is going to be played out probably in Congress. We start with Senator Orrin Hatch. He's probably most famous in the technical community for introducing a proposal to allow copyright holders the ability to write systems to destroy your computer if they believe you're infringing. That means if you have something on your computer that is a copyright violation or perceived to be a copyright violation, then Sony or the owner of that copyright is allowed to destroy your computer. That was later removed, and then he later brought in the Induce Act. Now, the Induce Act will remove the Sony Betamax case if it's passed. It's going to get a lot more publicity lately because the Grokster case just came through, which said Grokster brings out Kazaa. Kazaa is a peer-to-peer file sharing system where a lot of copyright infringing material is passed around. Kazaa has always said that we're not liable for what our customers hold, and the courts agreed with them. So now, if the Induce law passes, they will be guilty under the Induce, which Induce means if you have a device or program or pretty much anything that causes that promotes somebody to violate copyright, you're guilty. That means if you make an MP3 player, then you could be tried, you could be found guilty underneath Induce. Regardless of if it has non-infringing purpose. This is really recent, and it's only gone through, it hasn't even really gone too far, but it will. He also later brought in the Consumer Broadband and Digital Promotion Act. That's Senator Fritz Hollings. Basically, it's trusted compute. Yeah, the senator from Disney is the comment made. it's basically trust in computing. I'm not going to really get into this because there is a talk to, on Sunday at 2:30 here in Piedmont on trusted computing. Basically, it says that no system, any kind of technology system that will read copyrighted material law that would prohibit any kind of technology that reads digital content without DRM. It makes DRM a mandate. Not all is lost. We have some good people in Congress. We have Representative Rick Boucher. He proposed House Resolution 107, which is the Digital Media Consumer Rights Act. It promotes a balance between consumers and copyright. The other one is Representative Zoe Lofgren. He's a Democrat from California. He proposed the Balance Act, which is House Resolution 1066. It benefits the idea of this is to benefit the authors without hurting the consumers. The idea is to go back to kind of back to where we started, back to the Sony, the end of the Betamax case. In conclusion of my slides is we have digital entertainment is the future. We've gone from 8-tracks to cassettes, cassettes to CDs, CDs to downloadable music. So there's many interested parties. There's copyright holders, consumers, entertainers. DRM is not meeting its initial intent. Again, all the DRM system we talked about today have been broken. DMCA lets people write copyright law. Copyright, you can break copyright by, you can break the law by not breaking copyright under the DMCA. Courts are currently drawing the line, and Congress is going to be the key. These are some of my sources. Wikipedia is great. And the slides can be found at my website, and I'm open to comments and discussions. You can email me. And now we'll open the floor to questions. Hold on a second. I think we're getting a mic ready. So. Questions? I think they're asking you to step up to the mic to ask the questions because we're recording audio.
The basic problem that I see with where they said any kind of software used for distribution, effectively, can't that be used to describe most any network communication system like email or FTP or IRC or virtually any system that has capacity to send a data packet?
I don't think I totally understand your question.
Okay, the law that's basically being set up so that, you know, like, it's illegal to use a technology that can be used to distribute material illegally.
Yes.
That's virtually every program we use.
It could virtually, yes, it could virtually.
So that's the problem. You open up that doorway, a company can then sue a company for using email.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the induce act, correct? Any exchange
internet, yeah.
can be an inducing technology and therefore illegal. That means HTTP, email, IRC, all
FTP,
these protocols.
Yeah, every
exactly.
Protocol that's out there could be technically fall under that.
Yes, that's some of the fear. I mean, again, the Induce Act has just started. It's not. There's been a lot of under talk, but not a lot of upper level talk on this
yet. Ask any lawyer about the great thing about precedent.
Yes, exactly. No, you're correct. Any other questions? Please?
Give me something to do?
Yes.
I was reading on the EFF site not too long ago. I think it was about the Induce Act. You were going to do some kind of a mock trial using the iPod as an example of a device that would be illegal under the Induce Act. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Not as an authority, but I mean I've read about this. Mock trials are kind of interesting. They bring up a whole kind of slew of questions that haven't been answered. So what the EFF was going to do, or is planning on doing, is putting together a mock trial, basically getting both sides, and the defense or the prosecution will try to prove that the iPod is guilty of the Induce Act. The defense is going to do its best to show that the Induce Act is a load of crap, basically. Again, I can't talk about it as an authority at all, but that's basically what they're going to do. And I do not know. The question was, when is this going to take place? And I don't know.
Bueller?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't the DCMA come up for expiration? Didn't they put a sunset statute into it?
It's reviewed by the Librarian in Congress every 3 years, so it has a built-in kind of extension expiration kind of thing. There's no built-in. As far as I know, there's
okay,
no built-in expiration.
I know that there's one of those laws that they put a sunset, and one of them's now being debated over whether or not to renew it.
The Patriot Act has that.
Okay, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, but the DCM, the DMCA has a checks and, kind of a, the Library of Congress checks and balance kind of system. Very slow morning.
Why do you think I got coffee?
Any? Oh, we got a question. Yay. Or comments, too.
Yeah, does the Induce Act have anything written into it at this point that specifically limits it to digital devices? Because with the way it's written, pretty much a pen and paper would could be seen as violating the Induce Act. Are they just trying to push us back to the 1950s or just trying to push us back to pre-civilization?
The Induce Act has been discussed a couple times, and I can't tell you what's been written into it yet because it's still in drafts, kind of draft forms. The people proposing it are saying, look, we're not going to go after the iPod. Look, we're not going to go after these things. Look, we're not going to. But the problem is, if it's not written that way, they will do it, because then it gives, without trying to sound like corporations bad, it gives Sony and these companies a reason to use these laws. So it's still under discussion, and I think it's got a ways to go before it's final, but it's not going to be good, is my opinion and the perception of how it's going.
Sounds like the Sherman Antitrust Act, where originally it was supposed to break up big companies, but the first thing that it was used for was to break up unions.
Yes.
Something similar?
Yes.
Do you know offhand if the Induce Act is supposed to be, ex post facto, where it'll like go back in time and say the stuff that you've already done is now illegal? But like for previous products that are sitting on people's desks, like 20 years of office machines, are they going to suddenly have to be replaced? Yeah.
Again, it's still draft, but yes, it will make the – I mean – that's why the EFF is using the iPod as its trial, as its mock case. Is it will? I mean, it's if it's an infringing device before, it will be. If it was covered in fair use before, it will be an infringing device after induce, or it will be an inducing device after the Induce Act. So there's no real grandfather system yet.
Is there anyone in the government that we can talk to for more information?
Your congressmen and representatives are probably, or I'm sorry, your senators and representatives are probably the best people to talk to. Basically say, you know, induce is bad. If you start now, before it's really in the mainstream, you have a lot better chance of actually making something happen. So write your senators and representatives. They're your voice in government.
Could you discuss some of the penalties that are involved in these things?
I'll try.
Other than tearing up the machine.
The DMCA has, well, copyright has its own set of law, and I do believe if you're found violating copyright, it's something like $250,000 fine for each instance. You might want to look that up. I don't know if that's absolutely true. It's But they have to prove that you're infringing on that copyright. As it's gone, Sony or people, the RIAA sued a lot of music downloaders. I mean, Apple did a whole commercial, basically taking those kids and, you know, at the Super Bowl, everybody saw it. Plus, people liked it or disliked it, and while they didn't go to court, most people settled, and it was taking people's life savings. So, I mean, the game becomes, well, maybe not written in law, you either settle, pay, which is what settling means, or spend all your money on lawyers. So basically you in or out. The DMCA has two sides. There's a civil and a criminal portion. If you're tried under the criminal portion, you'll go to jail. I don't know the duration. I didn't do that research, sorry. And the civil side is the prosecutors have to determine a number that they were affected by. So on the civil side, it would depend upon the case in itself. And the criminal side is a criminal, and there's jurisdiction and laws stating it. I don't know that number, though. Yeah, the comment was ignorance of the law is.
Unfortunately, there's also no distinction of ignorance of a regulation, which is effectively what DCMA is.
Yes.
I mean, there's many cultures where this would be considered laughable. China does not even understand the concept of intellectual property.
Exactly.
In fact, and they're not the only Asian culture alone that has that notion.
But that's what WIPO tries to do, though. I mean, it's what.
And where Sony is located, this would be considered bizarre.
Yes.
I was reading about the RIA lawsuits, and it kind of jumped out at me that the cases that they really pursued hard, though, were people who had no choice but to settle. They would never have the money to be able to, you know, fight them in court. They would never have the money to be able to pay large fines if, you know, they were found guilty. And I really didn't hear anything about them going after somebody who said, oh, yeah, I have a CD of so-and-so right here, but, you know, it's scratched, it doesn't play well, so I just downloaded the songs instead. You know, so it seems like they kind of cherry-picked their cases on who they went after and what kind of force they went after. Am I just kind of alone in that viewpoint, or
well,
is that kind
of... I wouldn't say you're alone in that viewpoint, but they did go after... I mean, they went after Grokster, but the cases of the people that they found infringing, the individuals they went after... It did seem that they went after people that would just settle.
Yeah.
Can that be considered extortion?
I was about to say, hello, Rico. Wait a minute here.
maybe. I mean, technically, technically, probably not. I got to think the public has to think it's extortion.
I mean, the fact that it's these large companies and large corporations that are going after individual users. You don't have a chance in hell of you know, making your case, of really fighting this. I mean, unless you happen to be Bill Gates with millions and millions of dollars, and I somehow don't think Disney's going after Bill Gates, you know, you don't really have a chance of fighting this without
that
at all. It's kind of a circumvention of our entire legal system.
I'm going to plug the EFF now. If the EFF does a very good job of trying to defend civil, you know, people like me, so if you can donate money and support the EFF, because the more money they have, the more people they can help support. Right now, they take as many cases as they can, or they see that they have an actual, you know, chance of winning, and if they have more money, they will be able to do more cases. So if you can support the EFF. Question almost in the back. Oh, no, one more behind first, then I'll get to you. He was first. Sorry.
It's my understanding that you're allowed to copy media like a CD for your own personal use. Don't DRM systems prevent that? Isn't there something?
Well,
how?
That's the differentiation between copyright and DMCA. Copyright, yes, you're absolutely allowed to. If there's a digital rights system preventing that, then under the copyright, you're still allowed to copy it. You're still allowed to make a backup. You're allowed to do that. But under the DMCA, in order to do that, you'd have to circumvent the DRM system, which means you violated the DMCA while still being under copyright law.
There's something very wrong with that.
That's kind of what the case on Wednesday is going against a little bit. Again, it just happened on Wednesday, so there's not a lot of discourse or discussion on it yet. So. But that's basically what it said. If DMCA cannot enforce new copyright, or cannot make new copyright.
Yeah, not to overlap into the trusted computing talk, but it seems that at least the industry is realizing more and more that the essential problem with all their DRM systems is that Bob is the same person as Eve at this point. You're the person who you're trying to stop from breaking the encryption is the person you're sending the message to, and that system will never be secure. There'll always be some way that someone's going to find to break it, and
with the way how fast information travels in our society that it's going to spread, and which kind of pushes for trusted computing, which is very frightening for me because I'm a grad student in the physics department at Tulane, and in my research we use all GNU Linux machines, and I know that not only should Linux never support DRM, it never will. So this whole push to have to go to everything closed source, not being able to have control of your system, is going to, in addition to beyond people not being able to use their electronics in their home the way they want, it's also going to really hurt scientific research because the best tools out there are completely open and won't support this.
To reiterate, I'm not going to reiterate his point. His point is very accurate. The third bullet down is Cory Doctorow did a talk to Microsoft on DRM systems and how they're flawed. And he does a very good job of talking about just that, why DRM systems don't work. I didn't want to reiterate his talk here, but yeah, that's what trusted computing is going to do.
It's the same company that can't be shaved and improving its own security.
Oh, but it's going to be now Leghorn, which I'm sure is going to be incredibly secure.
But
in 2 years.
But again,
actually,
I mean, as much as
Microsoft, so it'll be about 4 years.
I hate Microsoft as much as the next person. Well, as much as any Linux user, I don't hate them. I just don't have a love for them. If you can get Microsoft on your side, which is what Cory Doctorow was kind of trying to do, you win.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they beat the Department of Justice, people. If you get them on your side, you win.
They seem to be very quiet on these issues, though. I mean, I really haven't heard anybody.
It's really because it's not their concern. They're not into selling media, so for them it's kind of a side issue.
But they are selling. I'm sorry.
As the largest OS in the world, you know, as in terms of use in the world, you would think they would have a stand somewhere along the line and say, you know, this is our position on this.
Microsoft teeters on a very fine line. They I think Friday they just released their download service, but they're also a player, so it means they're in both sides of the business. So if they were smart, they would say, we want our player to play everything, so they should be against DRM systems. On the other hand, they're selling downloadable music now, so they have to be for DRM systems. So, I mean, Microsoft's a big company, and I mean, so they teeter on a very fine line of being on both sides. So,
Sony's actually in the same boat.
Sony's exactly. They're making really crappy MP3 players, I have to say, but.
You'd think that since Microsoft is so big, they'd have a side, but the reason they don't have a side is because they're so big, they can't afford to lose one part and go for another. I mean,
they do teeter on both sides. So the question is, which side benefits Microsoft the most? I would say no DRM would benefit them the most, but that's what they have to decide. And as big as they are, it's not easy for them to decide, and they don't get a lot of support from people like me. So,
at the same time, so long as they don't commit to either side, then however it turns out legally in the end, they can just go along with that and profit. Whereas if they're publicly against something, then they're screwed if they lose.
But they won't lose.
On one side or the other. I mean, it's a guarantee that whatever side they come down on will probably win, I would think, just because of there's such a monolith.
Well, the monolith on the other side, the pro DRM, pro trusted computing side, they're not tiny players either. You were talking about the MPAA and the RIAA, you know, to name two. It's going to come down to big players probably banging. If Microsoft gets involved, big players swinging at big players. Yeah. So.
I don't know. Sony makes a lot more hardware than they do music. So Sony themselves have an internal battle going on.
Yeah. This is the funny thing. Like, Sony's a huge company. I mean, there's books out there written about, you know, how the music download service came around. And if you read it, you realize that, you know, Sony is a hardware company, they're a software company, they're a copyright company. So you have to wonder how inside Sony their record companies, you know, their copyright companies deal with their, you know, player companies and things like that.
Jeremy,
So.
Music hardware, I've read, makes $70 billion, and their music industry is kind of like a shadow of that. So their heart, they listen to numbers.
Oh, no, I'm trying to. Should be number 6. No, wait, it should be number 7. No, it's not number 5. It switches around. Yeah, it should be number 7.
You know, you turn that off.
Well, yeah, that would help. There we go. Come on.
All right,
try it again.
Good.
Wow. Wow, that one's loud.
Yeah, see? There we go. Try it again. Come on.
Ultimately, this is really just going to come down to a matter of money and lawyers, isn't it? The hardware companies or the media industry? Who has more money and more lawyers?
You've got a mic right there, Paul. Come on, sit down.
I like to think no. But unfortunately, it's probably going to be yes. I like to think that if enough people wrote their congressmen and, you know, senators, that something would change. But unfortunately, not enough people are going to write. So yes, it will come down to.
Everyone in my district wrote to my congressman. She might wonder why she has so much junk mail.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it depends on who's, you know, our Congress is basically for sale for the highest bidder. It kind of comes down to. So.
Hence the comment, the senator from Disney.
Yeah.
We elect them. That's a question mark.
Well, yeah, in some vague way we do, but, you know, we're not getting a great choice either. Kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Here's my plug for politics. If you cannot find a party you agree with, you're not looking hard enough.
Woohoo! Yeah, just...
Hey!
Speak up! Don't fall into that, though, because if you think you're guaranteed to lose, then you will. Because if you don't vote for anybody and you don't back anybody, then even somebody who agrees with you but you don't feel like they have a chance of winning won't.
The only way to vote is the one not.
That's very true.
Yeah. I slapped a girl yesterday for saying that she wasn't going to vote because it didn't even matter. I'm like, you know how many millions of people are out there are saying the exact same thing? I'm like, I'm not going to vote in November. Like, it doesn't matter. My vote's not going to count. I'm like,
shut up!
Florida.
Yeah.
Michael Bednarik is a Libertarian candidate. I'm not going to plug him here, but he did say something. He said, if you are in jail and you are voting on, you have three choices. You have the choice of lethal injection, you have the choice of electrocution, or the choice to be free. If the choice to be free is only a 5% chance of winning, are you not going to vote for it? That's paraphrased, but
yeah.
So,
yeah, good point.
I mean,
good point.
You have other choices, and there's tons of parties out there. Some loonies, but lots of loonies.
At least it keeps it entertaining.
They're fun as long as they're not in power, which is the problem we have with Bangtu.
Yeah.
Like Bush was fun and loony, and like, oh, wait, now he's elected.
I don't think Bush was ever fun. Sorry to say.
He was like loopy and saying funny stuff, and it's like, oh, he's really funny. It's like, oh, wait, he actually won, though. Now he's
if you don't think Bush,
how that happened.
It's not very
yeah.
funny anymore.
If you don't think Bush is fun, you don't watch enough late-night television.
It'd be a lot more fun if he wasn't actually running the country.
Actually, I'm scared of the de-evolution process. Who's the next guy going to be?
Getting back to the Induce Act.
No
question.
quick segue.
Stepping away from politics and getting back to the Induce Act. Could...
Just a quick segue. You'll notice that these things don't come up as political talks. I mean, President Bush or John Kerry or none of the major candidates are ever going to say, listen, people, copyright's important because no one's going to vote for them. No one cares. Well, most people don't care about that. So there's our segue back into the Induce Act.
It's why people running on platforms saying we want better roads, better schools don't win.
Yeah. Right.
Even though that's what everyone says they're concerned about.
Exactly.
Well, the only thing that's going to get play in our media is the sensational stories like gay marriage and abortion and death penalty and all that stuff. Because, you know, it's the whole media ethic of if it bleeds, it leads. So, you know, serious discussions and serious issues never make it forth at this point.
Character issues are awesome.
Say what?
Character
You had a question about Induce.
Yeah, could theoretically Windows be tried under Induce since it's providing the operating system that everyone is now making programs for that will instead be used?
Yes, but also Microsoft, I'm guessing the Trusted Computing Talk will talk about this. They're also in the Trusted Computing Group. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, they're playing as many fields as they possibly can play. But yes, I mean, it's the every technology becomes an inducing, well, most technologies become an inducing, you know, device.
The cool thing about being Microsoft and being ubiquitous is that if trusted computing becomes the law, they can just say, okay, everybody has to patch. Now you are all trusted. Huzzah.
Yeah.
Whereas with Linux, you know, or any of these other operating systems, it's not even an option to them because nobody will trust the Linux people to give them a trusted computing platform to build on.
Just quickly, does everybody know what Linux is? I mean, we talked about it a lot, and I just kind of assumed that. Does anybody not know what Linux is?
The guy
okay, I just want to make sure that everybody knew what it is.
I'm the random guy on the internet that doesn't know anything.
Okay, well, I figured most people did, but just
I'm the random
sure.
guy that's searching the DragonCon website looking for this. What is Linux?
Briefly, Linux is a... Somebody else could probably answer the question a heck of a lot better than me, but basically Linux is an open source operating system choice that is built and created by a community of developers and users. That's the 2 second. And there's no... Well, a lot of companies take it and use it. IBM, Red Hat, lots of companies are... It's not owned by them. So it's steered by community. That's kind of the quick 2 second. If I did a bad job, somebody please raise their hand and say it better than me.
Good enough.
Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Discussion? Got like five more minutes, I think.
Yeah. What's the time, Paul?
It's 11. Oh, okay. I guess we can cut it if we want.
Is that it? Well, thank you guys for coming. Thank you. Remember, write your congressman.
I'm not sure she can read.
But don't email them.
Yeah.
They email is, they just put a big filter on you guys and throw you in the junk bin.